Session number 12661, Mr. Jim Ray, reel 16.
Mr. Ray, reel 16. Now, the first thing you knew about the opening of the German offensive would be when you moved up to the Dyle.
That's quite true, yes. Well, we moved up and we started digging in the line, you know, on the Belgian frontier. The Belgian frontier, it was all barbed wire, you know, as the frontier stood. And that was in the lower ground because the River Dyle, it ran between two high pieces of ground. We occupied one side, was high ground. The river ran in like a broad valley, and there was high ground, and the Germans occupied the high ground on their side of the river. And, of course, even while we were digging in, there was a forestry as well around on the area, our side and theirs, were digging in, making a good thorough line of defence. That was the first thing we did, equipment off, started digging trenches. Right along from A Company, I was on the left, right through B, C, MG Company, and headquarters were situated farther back, of course, you know. That was the nerve centre of our battalion, where a command post was dug in there as well. And we started immediately digging in and reinforced our positions. And I did observe rested at the night time, then the next morning when we were fully prepared, because we worked like hell, you know, during that time. Everybody had picks, shovels and everything, and making a revetting.
How deep would you have got?
We got down to about where shoulder level, and so that we had a good parapet in the front, you see, and good observation all around. And while we were digging in, it got settled, and the next morning and I could look around and I could actually see the Germans on the other side. And you've heard about the balloon going up, haven't you? Well, this is quite true. This happened several occasions. And the first time, the Germans used a balloon as an observation post. They sent the balloon up and then the girl underneath, they had an observer, and from that position where the balloon was, he could see everything what we were doing on our side. It was absolutely spot on. And I could see a lot of troop movement of Germans, and I meant to say to my platoon commander, Mr. Peel, I said, see the jetties over there? I said, they aren't off in that wood and they aren't off getting stuck in there. He said, yes. He said, I think we'll go down a battle shortly, Sergeant. So I said, we'll get everything ready, you know. And when the rocket really...
How did you feel in that time just before? I mean, you'd never been in action, you know. How did you feel yourself about, you know, going into action for the first time? Even though you'd been a soldier a long time, you'd not been in fighting.
Well,
you know.
Well, this is it. We got settled in, got observation, and we've got all our ammunition ready, you know, we were prepared. I felt, well, I said, after all this time, we're going to see some action. And, of course, the action did start.
Were you nervous at all? Or
well, yes. Well, I felt a bit nervous, and I settled down when you got the adrenaline going, you know. And my platoon corporal, he had a bit of flutter on, and I just put my arm on his, my arm on his shoulder. Said, I called him Lance Corporal Nelson. I said, here we are then, Nelson. Are you ready for it? And I said, don't be frightened. I said, we're all right. I said, we're well prepared. I said, we'll be prepared for the phone now.
What about the men?
The men stood too. They were all right. They were all stood too. Well, first of all, there's a barrage of gunfire from their side, you know. They had us well observed. And they kept dropping the shells, you know, roundabout. And but there was no movement of any forward approach because we knew they had to cross a river to get to us. And we held our positions there for about two days, practically 2 days. And I did hear or read recently about the line and how it was penetrated, and it said the British and the Belgians were the first to fall back. But from my position, we weren't falling back at all.
So
so there must have been some sort of a bridge on the left, farther up on their line, you know, on the river for a crossing.
So the first thing that happened was just a bombardment.
Bombardment, yes.
What type of shell were they? Were they artillery or mortar?
Artillery. Artillery. Is a bit, the range would be a bit too far for mortar, really. There were shells, yeah.
And did it have much effect, this preliminary bombardment?
Oh, yes. A lot of... of course, there's... one or two, I think there was one or two wounded, but anyway, but not particularly in my company. And I was there when Lieutenant Hannon, he went got the BC. Actually, his...
How long was that into the battle? You say you were there 2 days. What happened during it? Can you take me through bit by bit, if you see what I mean? There was the bombardment. How long did that go on for?
It went on for about 5 or 6 hours. Good solid bombardment. They were softening up our position by the bombardment.
And then what happened?
And this carried on. There was a bit lull. And I looked on my right hand side, and I saw Lieutenant Hannon, and he had his runner. His runner was badly wounded. And he was wheeling his runner in a wheelbarrow, and he was slightly wounded himself. And he got him out of the fracas, you know, wheeled him out into safety. And that was just on a short lull of the bombardment. Anyway, the next day.
So that was all that happened that day?
Yeah. The next day, we were commanded to withdraw from our position. Get back.
So as far as you were concerned, they didn't actually attack in your area?
No.
The Germans didn't come at you?
No, they couldn't. They couldn't come at us because, actually, they had to come down the slopes. Had to cross through certain buildings along the river, the riverside on their side, and then they had the river to come across. You see, and then when they come across the river, they had to come across this. They had to come on the frontier, which is all the barbed wire and solid posts, you know, metal posts and all. Massive barbed wire. That's from one end to the other. There was a field and a long stretch of miles of barbed wire. That was the frontier.
Now, and also, Anna was involved in defending a bridge that was further up the line. You didn't see any
of that?
Well,
we couldn't, because we could only see, have a field of view on my company, say, my company frontage. Naturally, we didn't know what, I didn't know what was happening directly on my miles, you see what I mean? Look to
that would be the Belgians on your left.
The Belgians, you see, that's it.
And you couldn't see into B, C and D company's area?
No.
About how wide would your company frontage be?
Well, a battalion would be about, let me see now. A, B, C, we're taking up there now. Approximately almost a mile.
So you were
less, you know.
You had about a quarter of a mile each company then, roughly?
Roughly, yeah.
Or would one company be in reserve?
There would be, yes.
So a third of a mile.
Yes.
So how was the pullback? It wasn't really a retreat for you, I presume, at that time.
Steady.
How was it organised?
Well, we withdrew by company, you see. I don't know whether, I think B Company would come out first, followed by C, and then followed by A, and then the Machine Gun Company. Withdraw steadily as we could from the position, you see. But
One thing I forgot to ask, during this period, did you have any artillery support yourself to counter, you know, was there any artillery counter-bombarding the German positions, as far as you could see?
Well, as far as I could see, a lot of smoke and thunder, you know what I mean? I think we must have had artillery behind us. Yes.
So you weren't isolated in that way?
No.
So you began to pull back?
Very steadily. We weren't disorganised, you know what I mean? We withdrew quite easily and steadily without any no turmoil at all. It was an orderly withdrawal. And we got on the march. Now it was a march steadily back from the frontier, gradually marching perhaps about 14 or 15 kilometres.
Through Belgium?
We didn't get through Belgium for a while, because we had to sort of dig in and form a defensive position, because the Germans, they were very flexible, you see, they were a very flexible army. And it occurred, I think you've read about the Germans used to the pincer movement. Well, this was happening to us. We had to dig in and stop the pincer movement from closing from the ends of the claws and getting out before the main thrust of the Germans came in. They wanted to scoop us up, you know, cut us off by battalion, or brigade. That was their method of warfare. It was well planned.
And as you marched down, you were in good order as you marched.
Yes.
Was there any problem with refugees on the road at that early stage?
Later.
Not
later,
then?
No.
And were you under air attack at all?
Yes, we were. We were marching up this road in an orderly fashion, and suddenly there was aircraft around in the skies. We knew that. We could see them and hear them. We're marching up this road, broad road. An aircraft came over, Messerschmitt, guns blazing, low, right over the crest. The road steadily rising, you know, and it came over the crest. All guns blazing. Naturally, we just went through it to either side of the road, like quick as lightning, dived in. When I was lying there in the ditch, a I could feel the vibration of the shells hitting the floor, and as the plane flew over, they had disintegrating clips in the shells. You know, you could hear them tinkling on the road as the clips came out and after the shells going through the guns. That was a terrifying experience, when you could feel the vibration of the shells and bursting on that road. I don't think we had any casualties.
That was that your first experience of air attack? They hadn't attacked on the Dáil,
had
they?
That was my first experience of being attacked by air.
So you carried on marching. Yeah. What was your first? Do you know your overnight stops, or where you stop for these to make defensive positions?
Well, no, we kept marching on. After that attack, we got together, shook our feathers, and marched and marched up again. And it's a little bit traumatic, because I think that air attack shook our company up anyway a little bit, but there was no casualties there. And we marched on, plodding on, you know, carrying all our equipment and one thing and another.
Had any equipment been left behind at
no,
this stage?
So no, you've no. We had all our equipment, as much as we had anyway. Actually, bit of a tickle in the throat. We eventually came to a place called Hal. We took up a defensive position there. We occupied, my platoon occupied the hilltop, and we dug in there. Actually, there had been some sort of a gun emplacement on the top, and we occupied that. While we were there, the spotter plane came around, a German spotter plane, and a corporal, I forget his name, he put the stand up, you know, and we had a brain gun mounted on a big tripod, you know, length of his. And I said to him, I said, Corporal, I said, for Christ's sake, I said, don't miss this one. I said, if you do, I said, we're in for a shock, because he's spotted where we are, because he had a good observation of the ground forces, you see. Well, he blazed away about two or three magazines, and the plane just sort of fluttered its wings and off it went. Of course, it wasn't long, so the balloon was going up again. We got another Towsie. The fact that we artillery ranged on very good, so I don't think we had any casualties there, really, during the night time and early in the morning.
Now, who was...
We pulled out.
You still had your full complement, so you'd be with... Who would you mainly be working, taking orders from? Your platoon lieutenant, that would be Peel, would it?
Mr. Peel.
So you'd be reporting directly to him at this stage, would you?
Well, he was always around, Mr. Peel, you know, he's...
Would you see much of
my platoon commander.
Would you see much of cousins during that time?
Well,
your company commander.
Oh, well, yes. The only time he had his company headquarters, you know, well away from us. But when I marched from Hull, I was marching directly behind the company commander.
So he stayed in good touch with you during your retreat.
Yep. Yes. Oddly. Yep.
And what was Peel like as an officer?
Lieutenant Peel. He's a great bloke. Oh, he's great. Smashing.
What
about 6 feet two. And he'd fought in the Spanish Civil War.
Which side?
On the government side. The royal side. And we were chatting along, you know. And we stopped for a rest, and he said, have a drink of this in his water bottle. I said, I've got some water, sir. Hey, have a drink of this. And it was good stuff. So did you feel? Quite all right, sir. So thank you very much.
What was it in the bottle?
Like cognac and something mixed. And as a matter of fact, he had two. He had one on either side, water and, you know. He's how he managed, I think, that his great coat was torn down the back. He'd been struggling around in some wire, barbed wire somewhere, anyway. And anyway, we marched together from Hull towards Brussels. And
what were you carrying at this stage? What did you have to carry?
I had my rifle, and I used to take over. I used to carry the brain gun a bit as well. So he let the brain gun have a spell, you know. And I'm plenty of ammunition slung around my neck, so that we were all right there.
So you had a good load. What about the anti-tank rifle, the boys?
Oh, that comes in later.
You were carrying that later?
Yeah.
Were you still getting full rations? I mean, were there ration dumps? As you fell back, were they, you know, the Army Service Corps, were they still providing you with plenty to eat at that stage?
Well, to tell you the truth, Peter, I didn't see any Royal Army Service Corps. We did get meagre rations as we fell back, you know what I mean, but they became shorter and shorter and shorter, you see, because we didn't know exactly what was happening on around us and behind us or what was happening in front, you see.
So how would you get what rations you did get?
Bully beef.
Was it just left by the road or in dumps?
Well, our quartermaster, he must have been, went forward with the lorries and collected rations and brought them to us, you see, from wherever he could get them, or wherever the dump side. And he was in, of course, he'd been close cooperation with the Royal Army Service Corps and the rations. That was his job, you see. He did quite well until the rations did get really short, then, you know. And we converged on Brussels itself, and the sector in Brussels, it was absolutely deserted. It wasn't a soul.
So during this part time, the Germans hadn't caught up with you, the infantry?
No.
It was just a steady retreat, under pressure, but not actual physical. They weren't there around.
But I was particularly struck by the isolation of the part of Brussels, you know, the city itself. It had been isolated. There wasn't a cell.
No civilians?
Not a civilian. We went over a bridge, the Albert Canal, and we took a bridgehead. We held a bridgehead, our company, B Company.
So you'd be on the German side?
Eh?
Which side were you on, the German side?
Not likely.
You defended the bridge from the British
from
side?
From the Belgium side, yes. Oh, no. We were well away in front of the Germans. There was no likelihood of the Germans coming around and snuffling us, because they had to cross bridges as well, you see. And we held it. We were holding that bridge, so we had stone on either side. Mr. Peel was there.
Which side were you on?
On Belgian side, the city side, and We came down a big boulevard, you know, from the entry into Belgium, because it was all Belgian territory, you see. Came down this big boulevard and across the bridge. At the end of the bridge, big company, we stopped. And the commanding officer, he found a place for his headquarters, directly behind us.
So the whole of A Company, was it?
Yep. Sorry.
And what sort of defences did you establish?
We dug in either side of the bridge. A good defensive position at the bridge. And I noticed on my side. And
so you, were you on the right or the left of the bridge?
I was on the right side at this end of the bridge, and the platoon on the left-hand side of the bridge. And Mr. Peel, I think he went to report. Always had to report to the company commander, and then get his orders from there. We had to hold that bridge at all costs. We had a feeling that the Germans were converging very quickly on our heels, you see. And we had no food. We'd run out of food. So Sergeant Major came up and said, Sergeant Ray, he said, look, he said, if you can spare it, I want you to take two men. He said, we're very short of rations and forage. Go around and see if you can, anywhere you can, and see if you can get any food. Well, there's a hotel. I took the two lads in there, and everything had been left in the hotel. The meals had been served and things like that. They're up and off. Glasses half full, you know, scraps of food on plates. Nothing there, so we went in the kitchens. Nothing in the kitchens. We looked around for storerooms. That had been cleared out. We went down as much as we could. We went down in the cellars. There's galore of bottles of wine and things like that. Left it alone, strictly. Leave that alone. Food on it. Because they want some. A couple of the lads I had here, I said, let's have a drink, Sergeant. I said, leave it. Leave that alone. Don't touch any drink. I said, the first one that touches any drink, is, I'll give one butt round. I'll use my butt round your bloody head. You've got your bloody boozing up. It wants some food.